Translation and Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya. O my Lord, persons who smell the aroma of your lotus feet, carried by the air of Vedic sound, through the holes of the ears, accept your devotional service. For them you are never separated from the lotus of their hearts. Please repeat. O my Lord, persons who smell the aroma of your lotus feet, carried by the air of Vedic sound, through the holes of the ears, accept your devotional service. For them, you are never separated from the lotus of their hearts. Purport. For the pure devotee of the Lord, there is nothing beyond the lotus feet of the Lord, and the Lord knows that such devotees do not wish anything more than that. The word "to" specifically establishes this fact. The Lord also does not wish to be separated from the lotus hearts of those pure devotees. That is the transcendental relationship between the pure devotees and the personality of Godhead. Because the Lord does not wish to separate himself from the hearts of such pure devotees, it is understood that they are specifically dearer than the impersonalists. The relationship of the pure devotees with the Lord develops because of devotional service to the Lord on the authentic basis of Vedic authority. Such pure devotees are not mundane sentimentalists, but are factually realists because their activities are supported by the Vedic authorities who have given oral reception to the facts mentioned in the Vedic literatures. The word paraya is very significant. Parabhakti, or spontaneous love of God, is the basis of an intimate relationship with the Lord. This highest stage of relationship with the Lord can be attained simply by hearing about Him, His name, form, quality, etc., from authentic sources like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, recited by pure, unalloyed devotees of the Lord. Verse again. Ye tu tvadiya charanam bujakosha gantam jigrantikana vivarai shrutivatanitam bhaktya grihita charana paraya chatesham na paishinata hridayam buruhat svapam sam. O my Lord, persons who smell the aroma of your lotus feet, carried by the air of Vedic sound through the holes of the ears, accept your devotional service. For them you are never separated from the lotus of their hearts. Om jnana timirandasya jnananjana shalakaya trakshurimilitam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha jai shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadadhar shri vasadi gaura bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, in this chapter, we're hearing the prayers of Lord Brahma. I like the prayers of Lord Brahma. Wherever we hear them in Srimad Bhagavatam, they always sound very substantial, very authoritative, and very clear. You can really feel that Brahma is an authority, a bona fide authority. And the Sanskrit in this verse is very nice. It's quite approachable. If you have a look at it, then obviously we read the purport and everything else, but and the translation. But if you just look at the Sanskrit, there's quite a lot of words that devotees will be familiar with. Ye tu tvadiya charanam bujakosha gandam. So what does charana mean? Feet, which means feet. And ambuja? Shelter, no? Lotus, that's right. So we hear that quite a lot. Ambuja means lotus. So charanam buja. And tvadiya is yours. So tvadiya charanam charanambuja, so your lotus feet, kosha gandham. Do you know what ganda means? Pujaris will probably know, because you say Aisha ganda. Smell, yeah, it means scent as well. So it's talking about the scent of your lotus feet. So some of us might not have a very nice scent to our lotus feet, but Krishna has a very nice scent to his lotus feet. So your lotus feet, Lord, in the next verse, Jigranti means to smell. Karna Vivarai, what does Karna mean? Ears, yeah, just like Karna, right, in the Mahabharata. So he was born from the ear of Draupadi, is that correct? Yeah, he was born from her ear, I believe. So he's called Ear, Karna. Jigranti Karna Vivarai Shruti Vatanitam. So we know what Shruti is, right? This is the Vedas, this is the Vedic scriptures. So it's saying that the smell of your lotus feet, Krishna, is experienced, Jigranti, through the ear, Karna, through the Vedas. So the taste of your lotus feet is experienced through us hearing the Vedas. It's not experienced by us smelling it, it's experienced through us hearing it. And then the next line, bhaktya, what do you think bhaktya means? Not devotees. Devotion, it means devotional service, Srila Prabhupada translates it here, bhaktya. I think that's instrumental, in case some Sanskrit scholar can correct me. Oh no, but that would be bhaktena. Anyway, by devotional service, through devotional service, grihita charana, charana, they accept your feet, paraya chatesham. So Srila Prabhupada mentions this word paraya in the purport. Did anybody notice what it means? Para, I think we know this as well. Para and apara. Yeah, para means like above, supreme, transcendental, and apara means not supreme. Like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, aparayamitastvanyam prakritim vidime param jiva bhuta mahabaho yayidam daryate jagat. Aparayamitastvanyam. Because he's talking about his energies. Bhumirapo nalovayu kamano buddhirevacha. He says that verse first. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and force, ego. These are my eight separated material energies. So they're the apara. And then aparayamitastvanyam prakritim vidime param. So he's saying, except for these inferior material energies, there's the living entity which is transcendental or which is superior to this energy. So apara means not transcendental or lower material. So here this is talking about para, para bhakti. Prabhupada talks about it in the purport in the last paragraph. The word paraya is very significant. Para bhakti, or spontaneous love of God, is the basis of an intimate relationship with the Lord. So Krishna's smell of his lotus feet, that's the first line, is experienced through the ear by hearing the Vedic scriptures, and then devotional, like transcendental devotional service, is accepted by the devotees. And then the last line is very sweet. Maybe we wouldn't know these words. Na means not, yeah, just like in English, na, na. If you go to East London, right, they'd say na, same as the Sanskrit, not, never. Na apaishi. Apaishi means separate. So it says na paishi. Na paishi nata. Nata means Lord. Na paishi nata hridaya. Heart. Hridayam buruhat swapum sam. So na paishi means never separate, O Lord. Hridaya, from your heart. Swapum sam. Swapum sam means your own devotees. So like we say swarup, right? Your spiritual form. Swa means your own. And pumsam is people, I've heard it means before, pumsam. But in this case, it means devotees. So these devotees are never separate from your heart. Sweet lines to remember. Naipaishi nata hridayam buruhat swa pumsam. So the devotees of the Lord are never separate from the heart of the Lord. So Srila Prabhupada mentions a few different points in the purport. It's quite short, but very succinct. And one of the points that he mentions is that we experience I got a wobbly mic. We experience the taste of Krishna's lotus feet through hearing the Vedic sound. It's kind of interesting, right? We sing Angani Yasya Sakalendriya Vruti Manti, that Krishna can do anything with any part of his body. So in this case, we're following in his footsteps. We're tasting or smelling the aroma of Krishna's lotus feet through our ears, following in his footsteps, exchanging interchangeable senses. But this sound vibration is very important, the quality of this sound vibration. Prabhupada says in the last line of the purport that this highest stage of realization, this highest stage of relationship with the Lord can be attained simply by hearing about him from authentic sources like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, recited by pure, unalloyed devotees of the Lord. So who we hear from is very important. It's like parents, then the child is going to be like the parent, because their father is impregnating the mother with the seed of the child. It's coming from them. If you grow plants, then the seed that you're going to sow, that's the kind of plant that you're going to get. If you've got genetically modified seeds and you're going to sow them, then you're going to get very similar product. It won't self-replicate. It won't produce its own seeds because it's genetically modified. If it's a particular strain, like people breed animals, right? They breed horses. So depending on who is preceding it, who is causing it to come, then you're going to get a similar result. So who we hear from is very, very important. And we're very fortunate that we've come in contact with devotees, we've come in contact with Srila Prabhupada, that we can hear Srila Prabhupada regularly. Who here listens to Srila Prabhupada regularly, Srila Prabhupada's lectures on morning walks, something like that? So it's very important to do that, because Srila Prabhupada is the foundation of our movement. It's all based on his teachings. Of course, we hear from spiritual masters who are present now, or we hear from our own spiritual masters, but we should listen to Srila Prabhupada, because if things are done that are not in accordance with Srila Prabhupada's teachings, which happens in ISKCON sometimes as well, then we have to know what's bona fide and what's not bona fide. So although he may not be here walking around talking to us, sitting on the Vyasasan, there's so many lectures and so many classes that we should avail ourselves of and hear from Srila Prabhupada, because he is our preeminent Shiksha Guru. So we have to hear from an authentic source, because that's the nectar, that's the potency that we're going to get. Although, there's also that verse that Lord Shiva says, Aham veti, shukam veti, vyasa veti, na veti va. He says that, I know the purport of Srimad Bhagavatam. He says, Shukadev Goswami knows the purport of Srimad Bhagavatam. Vyasadev may or may not know the purport of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is an interesting concept, that Vyasadev is writing the Bhagavatam and people hear it and they may get deeper realization than him. So I may be speaking Bhagavatam now, and some of you may be realizing that to a deeper extent that I have. But anyway, better that the speaker is qualified and they imbue that Shakti into their hearers, but at least what they're saying should be bona fide. So even if they don't have deep realization, even if they're just repeating the same thing that's correct, then that's also good. And we might think, yeah, well, obviously the big speaker has to be bona fide. I don't have to worry about that. You know, I'm coming to Bhagavatam class at the manor. But there's so many, this the world that we live in, the milieu, the nature of the world, there's so many unbona fide authorities out there. So many people speaking, so many people presenting themselves as authorities who are not bona fide. Like our politicians, for instance. They suggest so many things, they do so many things, they spend so many billions of dollars or pounds on so many projects, which are totally demoniac, which are totally destructive. We have so many scientists out there whose teachings are passed down into our schools, who are totally unbona fide, who are presenting so many theories that are made up, totally concocted. Bhakti Vasudeva Swami was speaking the other day saying that the Big Bang theory, with these theories, they have to be replicable. Can you do that again? You know, let's have an experiment in the temple room. Let's blow something up and see if you get, you know, living entities, if you get universes, if you get planets, if you get the sun coming up and going down and the plants growing just at the right time and shedding their leaves in the winter. And is that going to happen from an explosion? Do we have that experience? No. And we know that as devotees. But how about before we became devotees? Did we think, we just kind of accept it as a default, right? You don't grow up thinking that's wrong because it's just what you're taught. It's what you're given. It's what you're fed. We're not conscious of it. I never really thought about it growing up that it would be wrong. I just, you know, it's just reality. It's just what you accept. So we may have the truth. We may be familiar with it. But if we see that actually there's so many unbona fide authorities out there with so much power and so much control and so much backing, how important it is for us to go out and give Krishna consciousness to others. How important it is for us to spread Krishna consciousness. And there's many ways that we can do that. A lot of devotees here go out on Harinam regularly. It may seem a small thing, I go on Harinam once a week, but it's not a small thing. It's a huge thing. It's a very powerful thing. And people get purified just by hearing those holy names. So very important for us to give this to others and represent these true bona fide authorities. The second point I was going to mention is that an important part of this verse is saying, for them you are never separated from the lotus of their hearts. So the devotee is na paishi, they're never separated from the Lord. Okay, good. Swapum sam, Krishna's own devotees are never separated from him. It says Krishna never wants to be separated from his devotees, he always wants to be with them. But how do we do that? How do we enact that in our daily lives? How do we always be connected to the Lord? Any suggestions? Being in constant connection with the holy name. So we have to chant the holy name incessantly. Do we do that? Do we always chant the holy name? Not so easy. I remember my spiritual master saying, when you're sick, then at least you can chant the holy name all day long. And it's like, I thought, well, God, when I'm sick, I just want to sleep, you know, I just want to lie down. It's so difficult even to chant my 16 rounds. So there may be different levels of devotees. But yeah, there are some devotees who chant. I was just reading the other day, my son has this book by Indrajumna Swami, Diaries of a Traveling Preacher. I think that's what it's called. And it's there. It's one, so many amazing pastimes with Indrajumna Maharaj around the world, miraculous things. One of them, he was in Russia. And he had one disciple who was his secretary at one point, but her health was very bad. She was quite a young lady. First she had bad legs when she was his secretary, and then after that her health got much worse and she was like homebound and she couldn't do very much. Homebound, I don't think that's a word referring to sickness, but not bedbound, but she couldn't leave her house. So he wanted to go and visit her, so they arranged it. I think it was in Siberia. They went over to that area. It was a very rough area. She was living in a block of flats with her mum. They went up to the block of flats. There was graffiti all over the walls. Like you could smell people had been passing urine on the stairs. And they were knocked on the door and her mother came. And she was very surprised and happy to see Indrajumna Maharaj. And he went in to see her. And she was also very happy to see him. She looked very weak and emaciated, but she looked very effulgent and very happy. And her mother was telling Indrajumna Maharaj that she just chants the holy name. That's all she does. For about 20 hours a day, she chants on her beads. Every now and again, she reads the scriptures. Says she eats some porridge every couple of days. And then all she does for the rest of the time is just chant the holy name. So when I read that, it had such an effect on my consciousness that is possible. We hear about Haridas Thakur and the six Goswamis and different devotees. One time I was in Jagannath Puri. We went to the Totogopinath temple, and there were different pujaris there, and I asked him, what are you going to do today? And he said, I finished my worship in the morning. I'd done like 3 hours of deity worship. He was quite young, about 25, 30 years old. He said, now I'm going to go and chant my rounds. I said, okay, how many rounds do you chant? He said, 64 every day. I said, how long does it take you? He said, about 8 hours. So he does his pujari service in the morning, then he chants his rounds, 8 hours of japa every day. So that's happening right now in India, and probably many, many people doing that. But this Mataji was chanting like 20 hours a day in japa. And Indrajuna Maharaj talked to her, and then he had to leave for a program. And he said as soon as he started to leave, she put her hand in the bead bag again, closed her eyes and started chanting. So this is hopefully something one day we'll also be able to attain, this taste, this absorption in the holy names, where it's just natural, it's just something that we take shelter of. I think devotees also experience that, hopefully, then even if we're not chanting japa all the time, then we're singing Hare Krishna, right? You come out of the temple room, you're walking down the street, and you're just chanting Hare Krishna. And it's quite amazing. We may not think about it or appreciate it, but Nama Chintamani Krishnas Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purna Shuddho Nitya Mukto Binatva Nama Namanaho. Binatva Nama Namanaho. There's no difference between the name of the Lord and the Lord. So, directly or indirectly, we're conscious of Krishna. We're chanting the holy name. Maybe experience your driving or whatever it may be you're doing. And this is going on in your mind even, Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So we're so fortunate. But other things also come into our minds. Other desires also come into our minds. There's many things we have to deal with in life. Many things we have to go through. Krishna doesn't usually make it particularly easy for the devotees in the course of their lives either. Vipada shantita shashvat tatra tatra jagat guru bhavanam darshanam tatsyat apuna bhavadarshanam. So Queen Kunti is praying, Vipada shantita shashvat tatra tatra jagat guru bhavanam darshanam tatsyat apuna bhavadarshanam. She's saying, let them come again and again. Let these difficulties come again and again. Tatra 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 tatra. Because when these difficulties come, then we don't have to, we take your darshan, we call out to you, and when we take your darshan, bhavanam darshanam tatsyat, then we don't have to take darshan of birth and death anymore. So Krishna gives us many difficulties, gives us many challenges, because then we call out to Krishna. But there'll be many challenges during our lives, and what do we call out to? What do we see? Krishna gives us an opportunity in the Bhagavad Gita, and he explains that everything is me. You go out, you go to work. What's the big problem? That office block is me. You have your office workers that you work with. Some of them you like, some of them you don't like. It's all my energy. Yeah, we can say that the jiva, okay, that's not. There's a difference between the jiva and the living entity. But ultimately, it's all Krishna's energy, right? It's all coming from Krishna. It's not. Nothing is different from Krishna. Achincha beda beda tattva. Everything is Krishna, and there's a distinction too, that there's a differentiation between it and Krishna. But ultimately, everything is Krishna's energy. It's our illusion that we think something is different than Krishna, we think something is separate from Krishna. It's said, who is it that says it? Maybe Karabhajana Muni, I think, I'm not sure what canto, 10th, 11th, or 12th. Bayam dvitiya abhiniveshita syat. He said that bayam comes when we see two things. Bayam dvitiya. So dvi means two. We become fearful when we see two things. We see something other than Krishna. If you understand that everything is Krishna, everything is Krishna's energy, then we like Krishna, right? We don't have a problem with Krishna. Non-devotees may have a problem with Krishna. Prabhupada says you either see Krishna as your lover or you see him as death. So the devotees see Krishna as their lover, as their beloved. They want to see Krishna. For non-devotees, then Krishna is the most fearful. who's coming to take everything away, right? Their whole lives have been trying to, like a little squirrel, gathering up their hazelnuts, putting their money in their pension pot, putting their money in their house, investing their money in their children, protecting themselves, opposing others. Somebody bumps your car, come out of your car, start shouting at them. You're trying to protect your things and protect your nation. And then Krishna comes and takes everything away. Everything. All those things that you worked your whole life for. So the non-devotees don't like that. How can God do this to me? And even people who believe in God, if they don't have strong faith, then they have some faith. Some of my relatives are like that. One of my relatives was a God-conscious person, Christian, which was quite unusual in my family, going to church. And then something happened in their life, and then no more, then it's over, no more faith. Well, how can that happen to me? So if we don't have strong faith, then it can break at a certain point. And I see that, I think if you're around a few years, you see that with many devotees. A situation comes up and it's beyond the mark, it's too much. It's too much for me, Krishna, I don't need this, I'll go do something else. But if we have strong faith, then we see that it's Krishna's form in everything. And Krishna explains this many times. Rasoham apsukuntaya prabhasmi shashi sodayayaho pranavasarva vedeshu shabdake purusham rishi. And then he says to Arjuna at the end, but what's the point? What, do you want me to list everything? I am the flooring in the temple. I am the latticed windows. I can't list everything. I am everything. But I can't list everything. You just take it for granted. Train yourself with this vision and understand that wherever you go, it's nothing other than my energy. So Krishna explains that many times to Arjuna. And it's a very powerful thing if you practice that meditation. Rasoham apsukuntaya, okay, Krishna's water. He's the light of the sun and he's the light of the moon. Pranavasarva Vedeshu, he's the sound vibration, the Vedic mantras. He's the ability in man. So you go to work, you see someone, you walk on the street, somebody is strong or powerful. That's Krishna's energy, it's Krishna's potency. And this is the Brahman realization of Krishna. Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nandaki Jai. This is the Brahman realization of Krishna, that his potency and his energy is in everything. So if you have a car or you want to buy a car, what is it that you want from that car? What is that car going to do for you? It's not a trick question. Why'd you get a car? To go places, right? Not just to go places, but you want to be in it when it goes places, right? So you want it to transport you. So it has to have wheels, probably. It has to be able to move. It has to be able to combust some fuel or use electricity to move. And it also has to have some kind of roof and some kind of protective structure to keep you in it, right? So it needs all of those things. So it's a car. But what about, okay, say I've got a car. Say I've got, I know, whatever car it is. That's, I can drive, I can use that, I can go to work, come to the temple. We call it a car. What if it has a crash? Then is it still a car? And it's not functioning anymore. Is it still a car? Still a car, right? But is it functional for us? Are we going to use it anymore? No. So what are we going to do with that? Say it's irreparable. Then we send it to the scrapyard, right? Then they're going to scrap it. And then if they scrap it, is it still a car? No, it's not a car anymore. They're going to scrunch it up. They're going to melt it down. They're going to sell it. They're going to make something out of it. So it's not a car anymore. So Bhagavatam says that this is a world of names. So we have this lectern here. What was it before it was a lectern? In its previous life, before it became a devotee, before it became Balaram and started to serve Krishna, it was a tree. It was a tree. So at that point it's a tree, and then they cut the tree down and they process it. Then what is it? Come on. then it's wood, and then they make it into this, and now it's a lectern. But in the future, it's not going to be here forever. They use it for, I don't know how many years they'll use it for, maybe 10, 20 years. And then they'll get rid of it and will chuck it away, or somebody will burn it, and then it will be ashes. So what is the reality? Whatever we see in this world, what is the reality? Is this a microphone? You could say it's a microphone, but it's not, if you think about it, it's not totally accurate, because at some point it's not going to be a microphone anymore. It's Krishna's energy. That's the reality. That's the correct understanding. Whatever you see is Krishna's energy. That's the highest, we could say, internal understanding of that thing, of that person, of that object, of that concept, whatever it is. The car is only functioning as a car as long as it fulfills those aspects that we're looking for, which are actually Krishna's aspects. It's Krishna's potency, it's Krishna's energy. That being able to transport something, it's just channeling that energy for some time. So it's useful for you, it's an automobile. When it stops being able to channel that energy, then it's no longer a car. So it's a very interesting thing, but that ability to transport something, that's Krishna's potency, that's Krishna's energy. Something else will also channel that, and then you'll go to that and use it from there. But it's actually Krishna that we're using indirectly. Just like, and the classic example is a woman, like a beautiful woman, a young girl, say maybe 18 years old, 17, 18, 19 years old, young lady. She's very beautiful, blossoming her youth. She's gorgeous. You see that woman, thinks she's very beautiful. And she is beautiful, but is she going to be beautiful when she's 85 years old? No. So she's not beautiful full stop. You know, she's not beautiful per se. It's Krishna's potency, it's Krishna's energy that she's being able to channel for some time, and then Krishna takes it away. So it's actually Krishna that is the attractiveness in somebody. It's Krishna that is the shelter that a building gives. It's Krishna that is the shelter that our money gives us. It's not the money itself. The money can change, right? When there's crashes, when there's economic problems, that £100 that now you can buy so much food for, it's nothing. It's just you take wheelbarrows full of money, take thousands of pounds to buy a loaf of bread. In fact, my wife was saying that when she was young, there was, I think it was the fall of communism in Russia, then there was no food. There was hardly any food. And it was rationed, and people would stand in long queues outside the bakery to get half a loaf of bread. Like one family would get half a loaf of bread a day. Doesn't matter how much money you've got. You can give them £1,000. Money is irrelevant. So the money, £5,000, is not absolute. Yesterday I was driving and I was just remembering this verse. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya jamad yasya yaton vayad itadatas charte shabhigyaswara tene brahma hridaya adikavaye muhyanti yat swodayaha tejo vidi madam yata vinimayo yatra trish sagomisha dhamna svena sada nirasta kuhakam satyam param dimahi. So it's the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. And Vyasadeva is saying that he concludes it by saying, I meditate upon Sri Krishna, who is the absolute truth. So he's the essence of it. He's the absolute truth. This may be a relative truth. Okay, you have the job of being a microphone temporarily. You have the job of being a lectern. You have the job of being a building. You have the job of being a woman. You have the job of being a teacher. That's a relative truth. It's going to be there for some time. And it's subjective. Somebody may say, okay, he's a teacher, he's in a school. We may say he's a misteacher, he's a misleader, he's teaching you about gender equality or whatever it may be, choosing your gender, or he's teaching you about Darwinism. We may say he's a misleader. The absolute truth is that it's Krishna's potency, it's Krishna's energy. That's what Vyasadeva says in the first line of Bhagavatam. So if we develop that vision of seeing that everything is Krishna's energy, everything is Krishna's potency, then na paishi, then you're never separated from Krishna. Actually, we're never separated from Krishna. But the problem is that we forget him. We see two things. We see there's a building, there's a road, there's people, and we forget about Krishna. Of course, it's fine to see those things, but we should see them in relationship to Krishna. We shouldn't forget Krishna and think, okay, this is what I'm dealing with now. You understand it's all under Krishna's will, it's all under Krishna's control. It is all Krishna, ultimately. And then we can be always connected to Krishna. That's one way to do it. So, and the third thing I wanted to mention is, Srila Prabhupada speaks here in the last paragraph again, and he says the word paraya is very significant. Para bhakti, or spontaneous love of God, is the basis of an intimate relationship with the Lord. So here he's talking about spontaneous love, which is interesting because in the verse it says, Bhaktiya grihita charana paraya chatesham. So what did we say? Para means supreme, transcendental. So in the word for word here, Srila Prabhupada translates it as transcendental. Which is, like, generally, we would understand that, right? Para bhakti is the highest devotional service. And then Prabhupada says the word paraya is very significant. Para bhakti, or spontaneous love of God, is the basis of an intimate relationship with the Lord. So, I guess many things could be para bhakti. Prema bhakti is definitely para bhakti. I guess it's relative. There's many different stages of devotional service. The beginning stages are definitely apara bhakti, and the higher stages could be para bhakti. But Prabhupada mentioned spontaneous devotional service here. And he says this can be attained by hearing from bona fide authorities and from pure unalloyed devotees of the Lord. So what is this spontaneous devotional service? Can somebody tell me? Do we have the mic, portable mic? What is spontaneous devotional service that Srila Prabhupada is mentioning here? Yes? Premanava Puri?
One's natural inclination to serve Krishna comes out.
Yeah.
So, you know, if your natural inclination is to be a coward boy, then that's what you do. If you're a gopi, then you serve Krishna in that way.
Yeah. So in Vaikuntha, then they don't practice spontaneous devotional service. Their devotion is pure. It's prema bhakti. If you're in Vaikuntha, then you would be expected to have the qualification of having prema bhakti. And you will have. But it's not spontaneous devotional service. It's a different mood. They are in awe and reverence. They are following the rules and regulations. They are worshipping Lord Vishnu according to the directions. Whereas in Goloka Vrindavan, with Radha and Krishna, or with Lord Chaitanya and his associates, then it's spontaneous devotional service. That's one aspect of it, that it's informal, right? I've mentioned these verses before in the beginning of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I don't remember them all right now, but the cowherd boys are saying, Tumiki, who are you? What big man are you? You and me are equal. I'm as strong as you. You know, what's your problem, Krishna? You think you're such a big man? Come on then. Come on, bring it on. I'll fight you. So the gopas are thinking like that. Krishna, you know, you think you're so important. I know, I'll wrestle you. Let's have a wrestling match. It's informal. It's friendship. It's succubhav. And it also says there in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita that the sulky words of the gopis steal Krishna's mind from the reverent hymns of the Vedas. So the gopis are, they're not just wrestling with Krishna, they're telling Krishna off, right? Like you tell your husband off. Where have you been? You know, we haven't spent any time together today. You know, always ignoring me. Do you say that to your husbands? Didn't give me any quality time. No nods. My wife says that to me. When are you going to spend some quality time? Does your wife say that to you, Deepak? Yeah, okay, good. I'm not the only one. So the gopis are saying, Krishna, where have you been? You're late, you know, you're supposed to come and meet us. And then they just leave him there, right? Radharani is just going to leave. She's going to leave. Okay, fine, I'm going somewhere else. And Krishna's heartbroken. So that informal relationship where Krishna's supremacy is not taken into account, that's an aspect of spontaneous devotion. But another aspect of it is us in our levels of devotion. So Malini Nitai Mataji the other day, Prabhu's mum, was giving class and she went through the different stages of devotional service. So for many devotees it seems kind of mysterious, like spontaneous devotional service, often they conclude that it's sahajism. We should chant our rounds, we should come to the temple, we should worship the deity, we should take prasadam, do it, you know, do what you're supposed to do, but don't be a sahaja, you know, don't be too airy-fairy and too emotional. Prabhupada says here also, he says, such pure devotees are not mundane sentimentalists, but are factory realists, because their activities are supported by the Vedic authorities. So when devotees become emotional, they develop some attraction, some affection for Krishna, it can be misunderstood as sentimentalism. But is that the case? Are we supposed to have emotions in devotional service? We are? It's okay for devotees to be emotional? In fact, that's the goal, right? The goal is for our hearts to soften and for us to feel attraction for Krishna, feel affection for Krishna. And devotees, as they advance in devotional service, Roman Chakampa Shrutaranga Bhajra, right? Mahaprabhu Kirtana Nritya Gita Varita Madhyan Manasura Sena Roman Chakampa Shrutaranga Bhajra Vande Guru Sri Charanaravinda. So what does that mean? Roman Chakampa Shrutaranga Bhajra means the devotee is absorbed in feeling emotion for the Lord. He's crying, he's shaking, experiencing different ecstatic symptoms. So our devotional service is not supposed to be a barren tree. It's not supposed to be, not supposed to be only lines in stone. In the beginning, it's supposed to be lines in stone. We're fixed, you know, we do what we're supposed to do and whatever. But our hearts are supposed to melt also at some point. Our hearts are supposed to soften. So we're chanting the holy name and we're actually thinking of Krishna. We're not just chanting the holy name, trying not to think of something else. We're chanting the holy name and you're feeling separation from Krishna. You want to be with Krishna. You're thinking of Krishna in Vrindavan. You're thinking of Krishna's pastimes. And you're identifying more with that. What is our home? Once my spiritual master gave a class in New Vajradham, it was Baholashtami, Radhakan Prakat. And they have a beautiful, I'll just end with this point. They have a beautiful ceremony there when it's the appearance day of Radhakund. So they have their Radhakund and their Sharmakund. And the devotees gather in the evening. It's quite cold at that time in Hungary. It's November, I think, Radhakund Prakat, or December. And the devotees gather and they sing Radhakundashtakam. Everybody circumambulates Radhakund with kirtan. Some devotees bathe in it, although it's absolutely freezing at that time. And then they have a feast and they have a class. And it's very, very sweet, very intimate festival. Not many devotees there, just the devotees who live there. And one time my spiritual master gave the class and he was talking all about Radhakund. He was talking all about the glories of Radhakund. And then he began to speak about Radhakund in the spiritual world and what Radhakund looks like and describing it. It was a very elaborate description. There's like a bridge that goes over Radhakund and different gopis live in different areas and Ananga Manjari goes there. And they often meet there and it's like, I don't know if it's marble, the staircase, but it's like made of all these special stones, these precious stones, and it's decorated and there's different kunjas and there's different flowers and different colours and different kunjas. And it's just such a transcendental description of such a transcendental place. And then he said at the end, he said, and this place, this transcendental spiritual place, which is all attractive, is your home. This is your home. So it's not something else. It's not like in India or in the spiritual world, which is billions of miles away. This is our real home. That's our real identity, is to be there, is to be with Krishna. The identities that we have now, father, mother, husband, brahmachari, grihastha, sannyasi, it can be gone in a flick of an eye. But nitya siddha Krishna, das, we're Krishna's eternal servants, and that means we're serving Krishna somewhere, and we're serving him there in Goloka Vrindavan. So as devotees advance in devotional service, that spontaneous love means that I'm not just fighting with my mind, but I'm actually absorbed in chanting the holy name. I'm attracted, I'm feeling love for Krishna, and it's natural and it's flowing. It's flowing naturally to Krishna. So that's the goal of our devotional service. That's what para bhakti is, and that's what's mentioned in the verse here, and Prabhupada mentions in the purport. And yeah, it's a fight to get to that point, to cleanse our heart, but that's the goal of our devotional practices. Thank you very much for your attention. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Yes, Puri?
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you so much for your enlightening class. So, as there are three stages of God realization, Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagwan, so impersonalists being impersonalists, they usually neglect the Bhagwan and only focus on Brahman. We being personalists, we practice and focus, and we are like more tend to, you know, realize Krishna as a person, and that's fine. But as you made me realize, and even we discussed such a way that we can't comprehend the Brahman aspect of Krishna as much as we should. We do comprehend the Paramatma form as he lies in everyone's heart, and we do practice in such a way. But how can we realize and be more conscious about Brahman form of Krishna, and so that we can progress in our spiritual life as well?
Yes, so we see that Krishna is in everything, like I was saying. We see that Krishna's potency is pervading everything. And if we have to train our minds, and it takes time. So you're in the perfect place, you're in the temple, you're practicing strong sadhana, coming to Mangalati every day. We have to rewire our minds. And you train it, and it takes time. But that's the Brahman realization of Krishna, that Krishna is everywhere, he's in everything, there's nothing that's separate from him. All of the potencies of this world that we see, they're all Krishna's potencies. And then he teaches us how to do that in the Bhagavad Gita. He gives us so many different examples. And Prabhupada gave that example. I mentioned this in a class the other day. He said they were on a morning walk and they saw one drunkard drinking his alcohol. And Prabhupada said that if that drunkard could understand or saw that drink that he's addicted to is Krishna's energy, then he will become purified, even if he continues to drink. So he's drinking and he's relishing it. He's like, this is my life, you know, that I can't live without this. And then he's understanding that it's actually Krishna that I can't live without. It's Krishna that's satiating my thirst. It's Krishna that's quenching my addiction. So if we see Krishna in everything, then... And it's also so powerful if you do that. Say you're dealing with somebody that you don't like to deal with. You have a conflict with that person. And you understand, actually, this is Krishna's energy. So I should treat Krishna's energy respectfully. Do you know what I mean? You don't think, oh my God, what an idiot, how is he behaving? You just see, this is Krishna's energy. Of course, we don't start like putting a peacock feather in his hair and stuff like that. We make differentiation as well. And you discriminate, like you don't go up to a tiger and, you know, give it a birth fee. But we see that it is Krishna's energy. You can't say that it's not Krishna's energy. Of course, there's many different categories of Krishna's energy. But we're naturally dealing with it in that kind of way. What we're lacking is seeing the connection with Krishna. So we have to train our minds to see that. And it takes time.
Wonderful.
Okay, thank you very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.